The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The news never stops. Life goes on around town and around the world. You need a talk show that keeps track of it. A program with bold opinions that's always open to your views. That is this show. Welcome to the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM. The Answer.
All right, everybody. Hour number two here on this April 5th, 2024. Eclipse minus 3 days. And a weekend lies ahead with a lot of issues we can talk about. And a week has just wound up that has a lot of issues that we can talk about. So as I said, I've got some answer on why in the world we have to wait forever to get to the runoff date where we can really get some answers on the groundwork and the plot lines that were established back on Super Tuesday, which is 1 month ago, March 5th, it was a pretty Super Tuesday for conservatives. Some messages got delivered and some others lie ahead. Why in the world do you have to wait all the way to the end of next month to do it? Got some answers on that. But hey, here's a little piece of info I have for you right now. It's Friday.
Wow! I feel good. I feel good. Ow! I feel good.
You want me to say I feel good.
I would not. So good. I got a year.
Sunshine, go away today.
Get it?
I don't feel much like that.
Oh, the sunshine will go away.
Some man's gone, he's tried to run my life.
One way or to other on Monday, either the clouds will cover it, or the clouds will part.
He tells me I better get in line.
And the disk of the moon will course in front of the disk of the sun to give us the totality that we have been promised.
These ain't dues I've been paid.
Great Jonathan Edwards from 1973. What a great record this is.
How much does it cost? I'll buy it. The time is all we've lost. I'll try it. And he can't even run his own life. I'll be damned if you run mine.
Alrighty, little sunshine. Alrighty. So shedding some light on something I have been wondering about forever. And it's funny, I keep asking everybody, they go, I don't know, it's a thing, blah. In fact, I think it was Attorney General Paxton I asked about this some time ago, and he said he thought it had something to do with military ballots. That is exactly right. So this is kind of wild. In the Texas Tribune, like a dozen years ago, there were runoffs, and they needed, and everybody said, and they have a thing called the Texplainer. Clever, explaining things that are Texan. Why are the runoff elections being held 9 weeks rather than the usual 3 or 6 after the end of the first balloting? And after going through all of the nuts and bolts of that particular election season, but what we have here is something called the MOVE Act. Love these acronyms. The Military and Overseas Voter Empowerment Act. Now, we all feel warmly about military ballots and folks serving overseas. But my question is, how the heck long do we need to take to turn that around? I mean, what? So the 2010 Federal MOVE Act requires all states to provide absentee ballots electronically to military personnel and Americans living abroad no later than 45 days before any election that includes a federal race. Now, so that's, Congress and president and stuff like that. To ensure that Texas complied with the new federal regulations, Texas lawmakers passed a bill in the last legislative session, would have been 2011 for this article, that set the original 2012 primary dates. It also extended the provisions in the MOVE Act to apply to statewide elections. So It also gives the Secretary of State's office permission to transfer absentee ballots electronically to military personnel and Americans living overseas. Okay, so I get it. So why within this world of instantaneous stuff, then still, why is it nearly 90 days? How about 45? Can we trim it to 50, 55, whatever? Because this whole three-month thing, it's kind of for the birds. I mean, and I know that part of it is self-serving, and I know that people will be back. That the people down in Texas 21, that they will be back, and I would certainly like to think that they will finish the job of ejecting Dade Phelan. I will tell you, there's a little concern I have down in that district, and that is the Democrats of that district. Because what they have now, what every Democrat in Texas has now, is a Speaker of the House that bends to their will on some things, making Democrats the chair people of certain key committees, requiring Democrat support in order to be speaker in the first place, obstructing school choice, and doing the slow roll on certain election integrity measures, et cetera, et cetera. This is why Dade Phelan is a Democrat's favorite speaker right now. Will they show up, as we can do in these stupid open primaries that we have in Texas, where Democrats can go, you know, can come over and, you know, crash our party? And we got to close these primaries, and we got to do this now. I mean, I don't mean now like where it'll affect this year, but as soon as we're done here, that has got to be job one. Primaries are meant for political parties, voters aligning with certain political parties to figure out who they want their standard bearers to be. And God bless our buddy Rush Limbaugh, and I enjoyed Operation Chaos as much as anybody, where we all went over and dallied around in the Hillary versus Obama thing. But, you know, loving Rush though I did not love that. And I said, this is mischief, and it needs to, we need to not be able to do that. Because up here in our neck of the woods, you know, the passion, the fire, the conservative fuel that gave us Carissa Richardson challenging Frederick Frazier, Katrina Pearson challenging Justin Holland, Andy Hopper challenging Lynn Stuckey, Helen Kerwin challenging Dwayne Burns. I mean, we flat got rid of Glenn Rogers and Reggie Smith and Kronda Timmish. No runoff there. But these are yet to be determined, and I would love for it to be like now, but it's not. It's all the way to the end of May, and now you know why. Okay, 866-660-5759. Let me share something with you. I just shared it with Rhonda, and I'm going to just take a pause. We got a lot of stuff going on, topically speaking, and I'm going to share a piece of news with you and do something. I was going to do it like 9 o'clock hour, but a lot of people are already at work by then, and this is kind of a prime time thing at 8:15, and I wanted so very, very many of you to hear it. One of the most memorable and meaningful things that I have ever done in my talk show history, in the 30 years that we've now spent together and dating back to my prior stop, which was back in the town after being born in Texas, back in the, you know, the town where I grew up in the suburbs of Washington, D.C. But for Memorial Day 1993, as I have incessantly told you over the years, I was at the Vietnam War. And that is where my good friend Jim Sailstrom and Tim Irvin sang a song called After the War. It was an event fraught with tension, because Clinton was president, and, you know, Clinton at the Vietnam Veterans Wall, you can see why there might be a little tension, because, hey, draft dodger. And I had told the audience there in D.C., I said, look, mouth off to me, tell me your frustrations about Clinton. I will share them. I will agree with you. But let's not have activism at the wall. He is the president. I don't like that any more than you do. Let's have this be about the names on that wall. And there was an event, just a moment in time, that put everybody's head just exactly right. And it was Jim Sailstrom and Tim Irvin singing After the War. And I kept that tape with me always, brought it here 30 years ago when I started at BAP in 1994, in those 18 years and in the 12 that I've now been here. And on Memorial Day and Veterans Day, I play it. I play After the War. And on some occasions, and then I found Jim Sahlstrom, found him like in 1996. And every once in a while, he has joined us to tell the story of that day and to just share what's going on with him and his love of music and his love of America. And about 10 years ago, Jim came to town. And Lisa and Ethan and Regina and I went to see him because he was in Dolly Parton's touring band. That's a good gig if you could get it. And he was every bit the force of nature, the magnificent, big, loving bear of a man that he had been with me on the phone, and I was proud to call him my friend. A couple of months ago, and we're Facebook buddies, on Jim's Facebook page, a big, sprawling missive about his cancer battle. And it was a shock to many. He had been waging that battle for a long time. But as he said, he just didn't want to bog everybody down in that. But at this point, he said, I just want to let everybody know what was going on. So it is at that time that I texted him and said, hey, Jim, I just saw the Facebook post. I add my voice to the countless others there, but wanted to leave some words for you directly. After the war is more than just a blessing to our nation and to my show over the years, it is the vehicle that led you into my life, for which I am forever grateful. To know you, to welcome you to the show, to visit you in your natural onstage habitat, I'll remember all those things forever. Now to see your spirit in that Facebook post, it just inspires me more. Thank you for the joy you've brought to me and my listeners. Glad to chat sometime if you would like. I love you, brother. Mark. He said, Jim, thanks so much for the note. I am grateful for you. Love to Lisa and your family. Jim passed away. And so what I thought I would do, it is not Veterans Day. It is not Memorial Day. But what do I say all the time? After I do that, I say, you know what? Let's remember our veterans and let's be aware of their sacrifice. Let's do it not just on Veterans Day and not just on Memorial Day. Let's do that every day. Every day should be a Veterans Day and a Memorial Day in terms of our appreciation for those who put on the uniform and for those who have died in service to our country. So today, for both of those purposes and to remember my friend Jim Sahlstrom, I thought I would go ahead and share it. I recorded this at the Wall on Memorial Day of 1993.
Those who have wounds that have yet to heal, I think this song might just do some good. Ladies and gentlemen, my pleasure to introduce to you the musicians, Mr. Irvin and Mr. Sahlstrom.
Is Billy Johnson, Indiana's my state. I turned 21 back in 68. Drafted into the Army, sent to Fort Leonard Wood. When I left my hometown, I prayed it wasn't for good. His name was Hector Gonzalez from San Jose. We got stuck with KP the very first day. And after peeling potatoes for hours on end, Hector and I were the closest of friends. And they put us on a troop jet and flew us to Nam. Some guy stood up in the back and read the 23rd Psalm. We talked about walking through that valley of death. I said, Hector, I'm scared. He said, just take a deep breath. When we got off the plane and our assignments came in, I got sent to play cool, he got sent a long band. Hector hugged me and waved goodbye at the door, and he said, don't forget to look me up after the war. About 3 months later, he wrote me a letter saying some days are rough and some days are better. And that a kid named Gallardo we knew from basic training was missing in action up north. By the way, I meant what I said before. Don't forget to look me up after the war. I was out on patrol
in the spring of 69. Stepped on a tripwire, took some shrapnel from a mine. Spent the rest of my tour in a hospital bed, with a pin in my leg and a plate in my head. On the plane ride home, I thought of all I'd been through. I'd lived 9 lives, and I was just 22. I thought about Hector, what I'd promised before, and I planned to look him up right after the war.
Years later in Washington, D.C., I was there on vacation with my family. I went out to the park to see that wall and face up to a past I didn't want to recall. First I looked for that guy that Hector wrote me about, but he wasn't on the list. I guess he lucked out. Then my eye caught a name at the top of the page. Corporal Hector Gonzalez, 21 years of age. My throat got tight, my mouth went dry. I looked up at that wall and I started to cry.
And the memories hit me like incoming fire
from a time when we were so young. Hector waved at me from the door, and he said, "Don't forget to look me up after the war." I lay awake some nights, I can still hear the guns, still hear the screams, I can still taste the blood, and I can still see Hector waving goodbye from the door, saying, "Don't forget to look me up after the war."
I will never stop playing that, and I will never forget Jim Salstrom. The song was actually written by Tim Ervin, the second guy you hear, sort of the older voice of the older veteran 21 years later in Washington, D.C. It is Jim Salstrom on the guitar and the vocal that you hear at the beginning. My name is Billy Johnson. Indiana is my state. And Tim Ervin wrote it. And when they got the call from Jan Scruggs of the Vietnam Veterans Foundation that maybe they could come play it for Memorial Day 1993 at the Wall, he said, "It's great." He said, "But I need to call a friend of mine because he's a much better singer than I am." I think Tim Ervin did a fine job, but he said Jim Salstrom always told us that story of how incredibly grateful he was to get the call from Tim Ervin to come perform after the war. Rest in peace, Jim Salstrom. You will always be a part of shows that I do. 8:25.
Not too long ago when I was really feeling down.
So on the occasion that Jim Salstrom was called in to do After the War, he had already had a couple of CDs. It was 1993. And one of them was called Grateful.
Someone who was close.
And this is Sunshine Girl by the great Jim Salstrom.
So hard when you go.
So let's let him take us into the newsroom. And then as we take a look at various hot topics, I do have a bit of a bookend, little circle of life story.
Coming down through dark gray.
And I'll share that one coming out of the news, and then more stuff from the week gone by. Stuff of the weekend, hot news topics, grab a line, 866-660-5759. Mark Davis, 660 AM, The Answer.
It's showing me the way. Just thinking of you is going to get me through this day.
Nikki Whaley's in the newsroom. Folks are getting creative now. On the Viascan of Las Colinas text line, eclipse-themed, very loosely eclipse-themed music beds. Little Dio and Rainbow in the Dark. Get it?
You know it always brings me down.
All right. Alrighty, if it's storytelling day, let me bookend something here, a little circle of life, if I can, and then topics aplenty and stuff from the week gone by and things I haven't gotten to yet, and of course content from you at 866-660-5759. That is where you call us. That is where you text us there on the aforementioned via scan of Las Colinas text line. So, in sharing with you the news of the passing of my friend Jim Salstrom, who has graced us both in person, on the phone, and through the miracle of audio tape from that great performance of After the War at the Vietnam Wall in 1993. Let me pivot to something else that I wanted to share with you this week. And since we're kind of in storytelling mode and in a sharing stance, let me share a little something from my family. I've told you, I sprinkle out details of my wonderful family members every once in a while because it's at this particular juncture. You know, my mom would have been 90 just the last month, and my dad would have turned 93. I mean, they both didn't even make it to 70. They both passed away like in the same year of 1998. And that made my uncles and my aunts mean so very much because while I was an only child, my mom and dad had passels of brothers and sisters. My mom had three and my dad had five. And so especially on my dad's side, through the North Carolina, you know, Kentucky, Virginia axis of where they all live, it's just been a real connection that I've enormously enjoyed. And the cousins that I grew up with, and we're all roughly the same age. I think I'm a little older than most, just a little bit, but we've sort of been walking through life and having getting married and having kids and experiencing this and that and thus and such. And I think you will recall, a few years ago, the story I told you about my Uncle Alton Dean Little. He married my Aunt Pat, who is my father's sister. And they were all born in Northampton County, North Carolina in the 30s. And when Uncle Alton passed, I just told a little story about him because he was such a force of nature and was through the power of God, through his preaching, but through what he and my Aunt Pat did with disabled communities, recreational communities in Bowling Green, Kentucky, where he, after getting his doctorate at Georgia, moved to Bowling Green and became part of the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers community. And so whenever we'd go visit my Uncle Alton, my Aunt Pat, and his daughters, my cousins, Betty Jean and Patsy, BJ and Patsy, that's where we'd go. We'd go and just enjoy that magnificent community of Bowling Green, Kentucky. You fly into Nashville, you go a little north, and you're in Bowling Green, Kentucky. And it's just great, and it's wonderful. And, of course, we were there for the funeral for Uncle Alton some time back. So BJ has a son, Cameron, and he is just walking in the steps of his pawpaw. Because if my Uncle Alton was just through his position there as director of recreation and providing facilities for people so that they can enjoy life in parks and gyms and facilities and just things that are so important to a happy life, and especially with a focus on the disabled. I mean, it's just crazy. Both my cousins, BJ and Patsy, have careers devoted to folks with disabilities and special needs. They're just unbelievably inspiring. So BJ's son, Cameron, who is now 30, talk about a chip off two blocks, both his mom and his grandfather. So he and his wonderful wife, Caitlin, were pregnant. I guess it was a couple of years ago. And it's like, this is just the best because he's just an awesome young man. His wife is just cut from the same magnificent human cloth. It's just the best. They're going to be the best parents. It's just the most fantastic thing. Just could not wait for Cameron and Caitlin's baby, who would be, what, my first cousin twice removed? It's all very confusing. Anyway, though, that pregnancy did not succeed, as we say. So, you know, it's always a matter of, all right, well, let's try again, right? Let's try again. So they tried again. And a few months ago came the word that Cameron and Caitlin were pregnant again. Okay, saddle up. Here we go. And of course, we just send every prayer for a more successful result this time. A couple of months ago, I guess they measure blood pressure. They measure during a pregnancy, they keep track of everything just to make sure that everything's going great in the oven, you know, going to make sure that everything is developing right, et cetera, et cetera. And it became clear early on that, Houston, we had a problem again. So for this particular instance, though, it's like, all right, let's see what we can do. Let's see what science and God can do together. And so Caitlin and Cameron pretty well went to live in the Vanderbilt University Hospital. And they said, listen, you've got to stay here. If we're going to save this baby, you have to live here at the hospital. And it's like, I'm 18 weeks or what, or 19, 20 or 20 some weeks. It's like, what? You know, we're nowhere close to viability, and it's like, I know. It's like we can't stay at a La Quinta down the street. Nope. So they lived at the hospital and were monitored and cared for, and they prayed, and we prayed, and the plan was laid out that once we got this little boy, and we know that it's a boy, Beckett Dean Levis. So we prayed for little Beckett, prayed for Caitlin, prayed for Cameron, prayed just all the prayers, man, all the prayers. And the plan was laid out that once we got him to 35 weeks, there'd be a C-section. And first of all, to get into the 30s was a miracle in and of itself. Just crazy. Thank you, God. Thank you, doctors. And it's like, okay, once we get to 35 weeks, we'll do a C-section, because by then it's still going to be a neonatal ICU kind of situation. But at 35, you know, every week you can get is a good idea. And the basic idea is we got to get that kid out of there in order to just get out into the outside world and provide that kind of care. So that was going to be it was going to be tomorrow. It was going to be tomorrow, but things started to get wacky again. Blood pressure stuff, heart rate stuff, oh Lord. So it was time to go early, and they went early. And it was, in fact, this past weekend. At 34 weeks, Beckett Dean Levis, Cameron and Caitlin's son, my cousin BJ's grandson, my Uncle Alton's great grandson, who bears his middle name, 3 pounds, 2 ounces. And he is doing great. I got these pictures of him, and he's got just this stuff that he's attached to, like hoses and stuff, but not all the time. And and he's just so little. He's so little. But he's so alive, and he's so healthy, and everybody, there's these pictures of Cameron and Caitlin, and my cousin is irrepressible. Oh, they talk about forces of nature. Yikes. And she had a Facebook post about how 30 years ago I gave birth to my son, and I thought that my heart blew up and expanded as much as it possibly could until now. And I think that we all kind of carry that. So welcome to the world, Beckett Dean Levis, my brand new cousin. Whew, that was some touch and go. And first of all, I think Caitlin got to leave the hospital for the first time in 2 months, I think yesterday. And they'll be staying at Bowling Green, Nashville. Ultimately, they're all going to be living in Bowling Green, but we got to keep this kid in the ICU at Vanderbilt for, I think, another couple of weeks, I think. But then it's going to move forward. And as BJ texted me the other day, on the day of his birth, it said, next Easter, we'll be doing Easter egg hunts with a kid who's about a year old. God is good every day. Okay, enough stories from me. Stuff's going on in the world. Let's address, shall we? 847, Mark Davis, 660 AM, the answer.
Where is my joy? Where is my furry soul?
great record this is. The great Paula Cole is 56 today. I saw her like 30. Are you ready for this? This will be, it was 30 years ago she opened for Matchbox 20 at Reunion Arena. There you go. Dual 90s reference. All righty, 866-660-5759. Collie, welcome. Happy Friday. How are you, sir?
I'm on the radio station. Hello?
Hey.
Mark, I'm trying to figure out, can you explain something to me? I haven't talked to you in 30 years, but how you doing?
It seems like it. I'm doing great. Hope all's well with you.
All right. Broadneck, what's going on? Now, you know me. You know me. Other than race, what's the problem?
T.C. Broadneck, outgoing yeah. Dallas City manager.
He's going to a better place, and he's going to make more money.
Well,
so I'm just trying to figure out.
Well,
other than race,
right.
Why are they getting rid of him?
Other than race? Well, the black T.C. Broadnecks didn't get along well with the black mayor. So how does this have anything to do with race?
Okay, so you think the black mayor and the black city manager didn't get along?
I know they didn't.
Hold on. Right. Mark, you're not stupid.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
So the city manager,
yep.
The mayor didn't get along.
Right.
No, the mayor didn't get along because somebody told him not to get along, so we want him out of here.
How do you know that?
You want to bet?
No, that's not an answer. What makes you think that other than just suspicions you already have?
I guess I'm better than that. Watch the next city manager be Caucasian, Hispanic. He's not going to be black.
I don't know.
Just watch.
When you see it,
the man wasn't doing a bad job. He was doing a good job, made good money, and he wasn't, you know, being disrespectful on that. I'm telling you, it's all just like, you know, remember when you were young, they had those men, they had your hand, and they got the puppet dancing to the puppet. See, the city manager's dancing to somebody else. Don't get it twisted.
Well, I tell you what, here's the twist I put on everything these days, and that is that virtually nothing has anything to do with race anymore. It's about personalities and politics. If they had spoken in harmony, if T.C. Broadnax was in harmony, I'm going to actually finish the sentence, if T.C. Broadnax was in harmony with Eric Johnson's leadership style, leadership agenda, he'd still be here.
Mark. You and I have been talking. You know I talk race all for 20 years.
Of course, that's the problem.
No, it's not the problem.
It's the total problem. You see everything through that lens, and it doesn't help you.
Yeah. You talking now.
Yes.
You saying that because you know you're on a ship that you'll never get off unless you just walk away. But this is what happened.
I don't know what that means.
See, in the long run, it's going to come out.
Yeah.
The city manager
yeah.
got kicked out by the mayor, a brother on a brother, because somebody white told him to get him out of there.
All right. Conspiratorial day. We'll never prove or disprove that. But let's see who the next city manager is and see how that all works out. Appreciate it very, very much. Yeah, T.C. Broadnax was making about $423,000 as Dallas city manager. And Collie said he now goes somewhere better. That's Austin. Is that really better? It is. He's going to make $470,000 as the city manager in Austin, and I have a feeling that the politics and perspectives of T.C. Broadnax are a little more comfortable in Austin than they had become in Dallas under a mayor who had come to his senses and become a Republican. So, and I really, really mean this, almost nothing is about race anymore. And that's such good news. You can be like, Mark, everything's about race. Except it's not. It's really, really not. You think everybody's making all these racial points, and they're not. They're making points about political power. Black folks love Joe Biden. Black folks hate Clarence Thomas. You know, and I know that's broadly based, and then obviously some black folks are developing some love for Donald Trump. But generally speaking, it's a hardcore base Democrat vote. And it's, you know, black conservatives don't get real popular out in the black community. And it's not, so black voters will prefer a white liberal over a black conservative at the ballot box in virtually any political race today. It ain't about race anymore. 858.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.